Good afternoon and welcome to Sundays at the Modern. I'm Leslie Merle, Assistant Curator of Education, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to this program. In case you're unfamiliar, Sundays with the Modern is an ongoing series of tours by artists, art historians, architects, and other scholars about works on view here at the Modern. And today it's my great pleasure to introduce artist Eric Parker, the featured artist of the first show in the Focus series this year. He was born in Stuttgart, Germany, and grew up in San Antonio. He's now living and working in New York City. He earned his BFA from the University of Texas at Austin and his MFA from SUNY at Purchase. In 1999, he won the Rima Hortman Foundation grant and has had solo shows in galleries around the world, including Los Angeles, New York, Geneva, Amsterdam, Tokyo, and Milan. His group exhibitions include Greater New York at PS1 Contemporary Art Center in New York, One Planet Under a Groove that was organized by the Bronx Museum and then traveled to the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, and the Museum of Contemporary Art in LA. And just to name one more out of a long list, he was recently included in Psychedelic, Optical and Visionary Art since the 1960s at the San Antonio Museum of Art in Texas. So it's my pleasure to introduce artist Eric Parker.
Hi. Thanks. All right. So I think the best way of starting, if you guys have any questions, just shoot them out as I talk. So I really haven't... There's no way of kind of planning this, so since we're all standing right here, I'll talk about this painting, and I'll talk a little bit about how I guess, start one, and then how it kind of unravels from there. And it's not always the same way. But for this painting, I came up with the idea first of the phrase, half-made man. The phrase came, I kept hearing it in a song that I was listening to, and well, it turns out that wasn't, when I looked up the lyrics of the song, it wasn't even in the song, but the idea struck me to make a painting about a half-made man, and to use that phrase to talk about how it would be, what would it be like to talk about painting sculpture, because I've never really made sculpture, but I'm fascinated by it, but I try to just stick to painting for some reason, because I don't want paintings that look, or sculptures that look like my paintings in a weird way. So the idea started was how to make a painting about sculpture. And so that's how I kind of started this one. And I drew a loose drawing, you know, and first painted the whole background first, making a kind of proscenium of this white area here, knowing that I wanted to put the figure in it, and then added the figure under pure kind of improvisation. And the funny thing is about this is like all the red, when it goes on top of the blue, has to have many coats. So why it looks kind of spontaneous. The form was created spontaneously, but in order to make it really come, to make it be vibrant, it has to slow down and be applied many, many times. So if it looks like it was done quickly, it took about, you know, 2 months to make just straight every day with actually two guys helping me on it, where I would come in the morning and, you know, lay the first coat, and it would take, just to get this red, like, you know, 8 different coats, staying within that same form over and over again throughout this whole thing, even down here. So lots of paint on this one. Pardon? It's all acrylic, except for this lettering down here is sign painter's enamel, which is an oil-based enamel. And maybe there's some other bits of enamel. This painting was done in 2007, and I think it's another interesting thing about it is there's this text, there's this writing element. It's kind of, I used to do a lot of work like that prior to this. There'd be whole passages just written pieces of information that I found interesting, a lot like the way Google works, but I was doing that before, and slowly it kind of, that went away, and this kind of figuration started to appear. I'm not sure why, but I think that after many years of writing words and lists and charts and incorporating them into paintings, a lot of this mark making is the same kind of thing almost. You know, it's a little slowed down and less, but this is the last painting where that kind of stuff appears, this writing element. And I'm not even sure what it's about. It's probably autobiographical. I believe, I was thinking about this, that all of this, you know, I think I'm a complete narcissist and all of this is somehow about me. I don't really know what, you know, but I think it is. And so we're just going to talk about this room? Is that it?
No, we'll talk about everything.
Okay. Because if you could see, I don't know if you guys saw the edges. A lot of people ask questions about that. So the deal with that is, I'm probably going to go all over the place. So if it's not making sense, just ask questions. Why making these? You know, there's a kind of controlled, you know, thinking and just physically being controlled to make the best kind of line or shape or form that you can. So on the sides, I often like to loosen up a bit or just write phrases and kind of be, you know, just whatever comes to mind, dirty words or marginal kind of things that I that kind of talk about the margins maybe of our society, being that this is the margin of the artwork, you know, if that makes any sense, you know. That it seemed okay to keep marginal ideas marginalized on this object. And I thought it also kind of objectifies or pushes the idea that these are objects. You know, I like them to be objects or I think of them kind of as objects. So some painters, I don't know how they feel about their paintings being really objects. I don't know. I'll talk a little bit about this one. It's called Say What from 2007. This one kind of focused more, you know, obviously on the idea of portraiture. And on this particular one, I came, you know, the idea of Say What seemed like it would be pretty cool to have, you know, in a head painting. And with this work and some of the other, these back here, at that time, I was looking a lot at Francis Bacon, late period Picasso, and how they dealt with the figure and portraiture. And it seemed to me that they kind of, their paintings dealt with the kind of gnarlier, kind of edgier part of the human condition. And I wanted to kind of represent that now and see where I could push that. I know it's a big kind of bold statement to say if you wanted to push beyond Bacon or late period Picasso. But those two artists, when I look at their work, I always think it must be, you know, like it's really fresh today. Like it seems really edgy today, you know. And I hope that that's how myself will look, you know, when I'm gone or whatever, if it's even looked at. But so I had that in mind. And also kind of this, you know, listening to conspiracy theory and some of their, you know, Orwellian thoughts, that kind of post-industrial figure, thinking about that, thinking about animation and how now we, you know, look at, you know, these Disney flicks, these crazy animated flicks, or movies, I mean. And so thinking about all that, trying to deal with, you know, painting the figure, thinking about underground comics, thinking about outsider art, prison art, hip-hop music, graffiti, all of those things. And where do I fit in? How can I make something jarring and exciting? And so that's how I came up with this this whole series. Starting with the background, painting it black, adding the figure on top of it, loosely drawn, and just working freestyle or kind of from my own imagination slowly to build up, you know, a coherent painting, I think. Working from the background, adding these bands, and then the chance part or the kind of edgy part is like painting over this delicate background or this kind of, you know, labor-intensive background to put the figure on, not knowing exactly how it's going to look. Right. So it originally started off with this black, which is a black gesso. And then, you know, just draw in some of these shapes or forms and to create motion or a warbling kind of sensation, you know, and make it come alive. And then thinking of painting this part as the dessert, you know, if it was a meal, this would be the fun part. The eyes being like whipped cream, like the always doing the eyes is like the really, kind of save those for the last bit. And I also enjoy like saving this, like painting words and phrases. It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy that. I don't know why, you know. I think when you're choosing a phrase, you know, it's. I like to count out, like when I have lists of ideas of what kind of words or phrases, you know, how many letters, you know, trying to find an even lettered phrase like six words, it's tough. Painting T's. A's are fun. Now I can talk about this one. This painting here. Yeah.
How do you choose your color palette? Is it always the same, or is it just what happens in your mind?
Well, I make a lot of colors. I have this whole kind of area in my studio that has, you know, like to-go containers for soup. I buy them by the bulk, empty plastic containers, and I just mix a ton of different shades of red or pinks and like collect them. And then I label them with funky names so I can remember. When guys are working, we can remember what orange was what, because there's a lot of paint colors in there. And I use it as a tool. Like if I don't know what to do, I kind of will solve a problem by adding another color, you know. I was looking at this very fancy collection in Dallas, and there wasn't a lot of color. And I think it's really tough to make a painting with like four colors, you know. I'm jealous, like why these have like 136 colors. I mean, you would think that would be a good thing, but sometimes, you know, I don't know. It's, you know, I think I solve problems. I can solve a problem by adding another color or bouncing another color off a color. I have thought about paring it down. Like, I think I'm going to make something like this in, like, you know, an all kind of neutral gray. But I know what's going to happen. It's not, you know, it'll turn purple and then orange. And, so I think, with the color thing, it's a way of solving a problem, I think, you know. Definitely, mostly always an additive process, the way I work. So starting, you know, this painting came about after making a series of drawings, and there's none in this room, so, yeah, if you guys want to, we could just walk around for a minute. Oh yeah, we'll end in here. So, what was I going to talk about? That other thing. Yeah.
Well, we can go over there.
What, the painting?
No, to the drawings over there, and then end in this room.
All right, yeah, let's go over here.
Sorry,
it just makes more sense to do it this way. Hey, how are you? Hey, what's up? How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Here with me too.
Oh, cool. Hey, how are you? Mm-hmm. see you. I'm just going to do this thing. All right. So, made a series of these works on paper. I call them liner notes. To me, they operate a lot like, you know, liner notes from record, you know, like jazz albums or whatever, kind of a history of what's going on. So it's my own personal kind of liner note. And I think I set it up like sheet music almost, you know, thinking maybe it's like silent music in a way. So knowing that there'll be these horizontal lines, like a notebook almost, and then that's one rule I set up when I make these, and then keeping a kind of border, you know, almost like a television, you know, that's also, I think it's inspired a lot by some outsider artists that I look at. So, but I made probably 20 of these, and they were challenging for the fact that you can't, the challenging part, you know, other than just making paper look painted like this, which is kind of difficult because it requires a lot of coats of paint, very precise. But when you get, so I would paint all of this up and then do this part, and you can't mess up. So you can't, you know, drip or, you know, as you kind of move along, it becomes more precious or, you know, I guess scary, you know, about the mistake or whatever. And so I did, I guess, 20 of these, and then I always thought it'd be harder to do it on canvas and challenging or whatever, and then that one's the first one on canvas, and it's actually easier, you know. It moves a lot quicker. But, you know, after doing all these, they're still mysterious to me as what they're really about. Like, I really don't know why I draw this stuff. You know, it's just kind of recorded in the head, and you just kind of let it go. You know, I mean, if you think, huh?
Are you left-handed?
Yeah.
But you work from left to right.
Yeah, just like this. Like, I guess that's how you write, right?
Yeah, that's how you write. But I mean, you worry about
your smearing it. Yeah, I have a piece of typing paper underneath. You know, but they do. I got pretty good at not. I choose materials that dry quickly. Like, a lot of this here is ballpoint pen, but the ballpoint pen that I use, I don't know what kind it is, but it's really quickly drying. It dries quickly.
Have you had a chance to look at this stuff up close, or did you just wait? Because you have to look at these close. I mean, they're pretty incredible that you just, like, out of the frame, they're like that.
You know? It's weird. I mean, I think I have a catalog of stuff, images or little doodles that I've had for a long time. And I guess as you keep dealing with them, and, you know, like almost going to the shrink, you figure out, you know, what one's about and how to morph into the other ones. You know, if you think of bebop music and how there's a song structure and then, you know, an area to kind of play with that structure and improvise inside of it, maybe that's what's going on. So you get into the rhythm of it and you can't overthink. You just pop it out, you know.
Can I share something that I
yeah.
have a strong feeling about, not just these, but mostly these, something akin to being bored in geometry class?
Absolutely. The whole idea, there was a lot of that kind of like stoner drawings or, you know, I thought of like high school, you know, being in high school and the kid that just drew and not even pay attention to what was going on. There was a lot of that, you know. And also Mayan drawings, you know, I grew up in San Antonio with a lot of that imagery around, you know, the Mayan kind of, I'm not sure what the exact kind of name of them, you know, are, but they operate in rows or bands, even around their pottery. And I think just seeing that as a kid, you know, that kind of comes out in the eyes and the little heads and, you know.
Is that artist, sorry.
No, that's cool.
Ray Yoshida, that Chicago artist, mm-hmm. does these things with bands. But yours is different. And you kind of, since these are like, one's called inventory or behold. Or,
right.
Is it sort of like you create this series of characters and then it's almost like a sort of set up like a shooting gallery or like take that one out.
I don't know if any of these guys appear in the paintings. I do, you know, I want it to seem almost like a calendar in a weird way, like a way of kind of recording time or, you know, when you look at those calendars that you hang on the wall, like this could be February or, you know, and then these are the days. I mean, it operates in that, the whole setup is that, I think of that, you know. Yeah, there's a Westerman head. He often, you know, H.C. Westerman, an artist out of Chicago, often drew himself, a caricature of himself. I like him a lot. I mean, he's a great artist. And so I throw him in there. I throw me in the way I draw myself. There's a Jim Nod in here who's another Chicago artist. That's good that you noticed that. What else could we talk about?
When you draw it, do you see it in the back of your mind? Draw it, or you just see it as you do it?
You just kind of work off, you know, I think there's a starting thing that you're maybe a way or a form that you're familiar with, and you kind of just can play off that. And then if you have four of those or five of those that you can play off, it's a lot like freestyling in a way, you know, like when guys grab the mic and they just, in the hip-hop world, they can just go for it, you know, and I practice that way. And we could talk about this, what?
Do you edit them?
No erase, no erasing. I don't want it to look, you know, like a sketch, you know, I want it to look like the line has to be there, you know, I guess that's important, you know. Like, if you look at graffiti, you know, like, it just has to be there. Like, there's a confidence in it. I mean, if you look at Picasso, there's a confidence in that line. You know, if you look at Bacon, not so much. It's about not really being sure in a weird way to rub it out, you know. But I saw a great Picasso yesterday at the Nasher, this still life right next to a sculpture of a still life that he made. And it's all just confidence, you know.
Make sure
you can feel it in your mind, I think. You know, you're familiar with the forms and you can kind of bend it a bit, you know. You know, you just don't even think. You know that they're going to have an eye, or little head's going to have an eye, or whatever. It's kind of goofy when you think about it, but, you know, these little bumpy ones can be like a way of breaking the space, or if you're kind of stuck, just add that. You know, you have the little pause, or like these guys here, they take like, you know, like I was timing lines how long it took, and it's about an hour, hour and a half. Sometimes on the bigger one, it'd be two and a half, depending how deep you and how detailed you wanted to go. So, you know, I don't, yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's weird. You want it, which other ones do you want to talk about? This one here, the image is kind of taken right from a Picasso, late period Picasso book, where he has this figure kind of doing this very loose painting, you know, you can't see the hand so much, and so I kind of thought about making my own version of it, and really kind of focusing on, you know, the hands holding like this, and, you know, this... He's the action being this, like, I thought it'd be funny if he's getting sprayed in the face, you know, and then the word drama, you know. So just with that kind of information, that was enough to kind of start a painting. And again, you know, starting with the black and then working forward, these little dots here that are supposed to be stars are actually glow-in-the-dark medium. So it's a phosphorescent pigment powder put in... a gel medium that when the lights go off, they actually glow in the dark. Yeah, so that's kind of nice. This one has it as well. And then, I guess, in, what year is this? 2000. This one's 2008. I stopped doing the writing on the edges, and I felt that these were getting too, the surfaces were becoming too kind of pretty or, you know, finished, and I wanted to see how it would be to make the whole kind of object painted over and less kind of gritty. So lately I've just taken that, taken the writing element on the edges away and bringing the whole picture around. And in this one, it kind of, the edges kind of go and do a little bit of different things that they don't just merely wrap around. This painting, The New Freedom, was done right when we got the new president. I think that's why it's called New Freedom. I don't know if that means anything, but that's loosely based on a Francis Bacon painting about this big, a self-portrait. Or no, it's a portrait of one of his boyfriends. Lots of gears and that, you know, right in here in this. So this kind of framed area was all pre-planned, and then the eyes were pre-planned, and then all of this stuff was improvised. You know, just listening to music in the headphones and laying the first structures down, and then the guys at work for me would come in, and then they make it really solid, and then I do all of these cross hatches, you know, over and over again, and dots. I'm the dot guy. I do all of this myself, and you know, what else? Any questions?
I mean, what kind of music do you?
Pretty much everything. I mean, I like to start off with NPR in the morning, and then get pretty heavy with like bands that are like pretty aggressive, like the Melvins, I don't know, or then end up with like Afrobeat, jazz, you know. Yeah, I think so. You know, the tempo could help. I mean, I don't really. I notice like if I go through all of my iTunes or records, there's not a lot of mellow stuff at all. You know, everything's pretty upbeat. You know. Whether it's, like, I like, if it's Miles Davis, I like the electric kind of 70s free stuff, you know, the difficult, I like difficult music. But then lately, the Beach Boys, I'm like, that, I've been listening to the Pet Sounds album a lot. I don't know, that's pretty great stuff. And then.
Do you always start a painted whole canvas black? The whole canvas?
No, I mean, I think, in the years 2008, 2007, I was doing a lot of that. And I guess that we could go over here to where I'm at now. And I'm working on still lifes. How's it? So these are kind of a little brighter. This image here, this painting here, I started with a Caravaggio painting, still life painting, and took the actual image of the painting, put it on a light table, and reworked it my way, and then projected it on, saved some time. And so the idea was to kind of, I think for moving into still life was to make work that everyone could understand immediately. Like some of the heads or the portraits are kind of, you know, they take maybe a little bit more time to understand. And I wanted to cut to the chase, you know, talk about something that we all kind of can maybe understand. Like to me, I understand this, like it being a still life, a lot quicker than, say, some of these paintings in here being figurative, if that makes any sense. So I take, find a still life like on the internet or one throughout art history, trace it my way, project it on the canvas, and then kind of make my own leaves, or, you know, kind of the stuff that I create is like in here, you know, this kind of eyeball apple or pomegranate-y type thing. And I think it's interesting how these pots or like vessel become related to these drawings in a weird way. You know, these bands, there's a lot of that action going on in there. So this starts on a
Christmas tree.
Yeah, a little, just, those were, this first set of grapes, this is the first set of grapes. They were tough, man. Just weird, you know. You don't want it to look too much like a grape, or then you're bumming out because, like, you know, it's kind of, you want it to be its own thing. I think it's important that it's the idea of grape, but not really. It could, you know.
Do you remember what you harvested from the internet?
This is Caravaggio.
That's Caravaggio.
Yeah. This is, you know, literally like hokey still life, enter, and then image, you know. So, and it was based on a photograph that I recropped, and I wanted the bottom here to be like really tilt, kind of like I wanted a lot of tension down here, an awkward kind of feeling maybe. And then I redid all the flowers. I put in blue bonnets, and you know, just that's where the kind of inventive qualities come in. The space seems to be more about a real space, or kind of talks about the idea of real space, but still kind of keeping to the, you know, comic-y kind of, you know, graph world, or not too realistic, because I'm not interested in going there, but I started adding shadows to create the idea of real space. So I want to hint at the idea of real space, but not be a guy who's concerned about giving real, actual space, if that makes sense. You know, I like it to be strange and you know, not really real, but talking about real kind of. So that's how this one started. I mean, you know, we think it's a still life, but this is kind of Dr. Seuss, right? Like, what? You know?
Well, I mean, you know, when I saw this, I got a feeling of, you know, where did that image come from?
Right.
And I got a feeling of, you know, 18th century still life where a pot of flowers is given the same dignity as a king by putting it in a kind of neoclassical draped space,
right,
like you've done. But then it's, you know, pinwheels and kind of psychedelic pinwheels.
Right.
I can think of a couple of paintings at the DMA that kind of said, well, that's the same thing, but now it's not the same thing.
It's been upgraded or like dealt with differently. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's taking that kind of trope and just putting a blend of, you know, things that I've always been interested in. Like, again, you know, I've always liked graffiti, but unfortunately I grew up in San Antonio where there was no graph scene really at that time, and you don't really want to be, you know, I'd rather deal with New York City police than San Antonio police. You know what I mean? Like, they're a little bit chill compared, you know, there's a lot more going on. So I wasn't a graph kid. And so, you know, I've always kind of like, when I moved to the city, I really liked that stuff, but I knew I wasn't really a part of it. So there's that. There's, you know, I think all of that kind of blends in. And then talking about this still life or painting these is, you know, and kind of putting that kind of psychedelia or underground comics and cartoons and a lot of lowbrow stuff into a kind of language that is considered, you know, very dignified or high art is interesting, you know. Well,
really interesting, the color choice. The colors really reminds me of
Right. Oh, yeah, I haven't even thought of those in forever.
Is it so you leave that to that or?
No, I mean, that's cool. I'm going to definitely, I remember those now, but I mean, I think the reason these colors are here is you know, like the magenta will make the green pop and the yellow pop. And so if you, Roy Lichtenstein did a series of still lives in the 70s, till the late 70s, almost into the 80s. And there was this huge show of those this summer at the Gagosian Gallery in Chelsea, and that, you know, that was, to me, I mean, it still seemed like Lichtenstein, and they weren't jokes to him, you know, they were very well done, and I wanted it to pop and have this kind of pop sensation to bring this thing out here, almost falling over. So that's, you know, I find that starting with this pink background or magenta background, you're able to get the greens kind of popping and come alive. I want the whole thing to be kind of living and growing. So it's just, maybe it's just a formal decision as to what color to choose. You could go with the purpley gray, and that creates, you know, a different kind of thing. But, you know, I also wanted it to seem like it might be a window or something that it's sitting. I think, you know, that's why it's a formal kind of decision as to what makes the image kind of pop and come alive. That's why I chose this particular color.
Do you have a name for that color?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Or all the colors are named. I don't know what it was. Fat Kid, this one was called. Because we were talking about, like, there was something on NPR about obese children. So that's what I called that color. And, you know, this blue is... was called Buster. I remember that. They all get named, so what happens are, you know, like the guys that work for me, there used to be a time where there would be, oh, what color is this? Literally the place is covered in carts with different jars of color, and so I just started naming them. And you know what, in the end of the day, it would be easier to have a color chart that they'd all be numbered, and that, but it's nicer to come up with names. So like that's, that was... It's kind of...
You didn't really mix the two colors to create that.
Yeah. Yeah, I made all that color, and then I named it Buster.
Because they're so even looking.
Oh, yeah, you just keep...
so even to have the same color. It's like sometimes when you mix, you know, something.
Right, I don't mix on... There's not wet and wet painting. Never. It's always make this solid, and then we'll go on and deal with this stuff. So this is completely done. And then this will be done. And this is still white, you know. And then it kind of working backwards. So this goes first, and you add this color, and then this one, and then this one, and then that one, and then, you know. There's never a mixing, like modeling on, I don't even know how to do, I've never done that. I've never oil painted, really.
And you didn't sketch that.
What happened, to get this, I found an image on the internet that looked similar to this, right? And then I redid it on a light table, redrawing and drawing and drawing, make a transparency of that, project it on, draw it out, leaving a lot of room to kind of invent forms and stuff, and then got to work. A new thing is, like, this is all taped out, and this is tape, this bending tape. To get a kind of cleaner, straight line. This is tape now. I never, for years, I wouldn't tape.
How much do your helpers do?
Huh?
How much do your people that help you paint?
This one, well, when there wasn't a recession, a lot. You know? And then that kind of started cutting back hours. And so I just did a show in Los Angeles. I knocked out most of the stuff. I got everything to about 80%, and then brought in part-time help that people I've worked with over the years to kind of get things to like 95, 100, you know, 95, and then I'll take over from there. So we had to do the last show, 2 months worth of labor, and I found that, you know, I went through the first 3 months making that show by myself, and it actually moved faster. You know, because you're not worried about so-and-so, what are they going to do today, what's this going to do today, you just do it yourself and get it done. You know, and it's kind of great. I enjoyed it a lot more than... So the last show at Honor Fraser in Los Angeles was, you know, like 80% made by me, and then brought in some hands to kind of... To knock this orange out, you know, is like, you'll be there. It can start wasting my time to get the day glow orange up to the kind of, you know, that takes hours. Blow dryer, you know. Yes?
Back to the paint. When you run out of Buster,
right,
then
you're screwed. You have to make a whole new batch. You can't ever mix it exactly.
But you can make, not have a written formula.
No, there's no way to even do it. It'd be...
You start all over again.
Yeah, you know, I can make something like, you know, I could get 95% pretty quickly. And then that whole section would just have to be redone. And in fact, that why I remember that color, because this was almost, it was pretty problematic for whatever reason to get that really flat. And I was almost about to run out of it. And same with this. This guy, this color here was giving me problems. I don't like streaks or... You know, and for whatever reason, sometimes even to do touch-ups, a lot of these purples will not. If you did a drip and you have to cover it up, I find that a lot of these purples will just dry completely one shade darker, and then you have to redo the whole section and make it look like you didn't. You know, so annoying. Like I save like touch-ups towards the end because I'm just. You know, and especially in the summertime, it gets pretty hot in the studio, and like they'll dry out, and there's all kinds of little problems that you don't realize. You know, to get one of these done is.
Maybe the colors that you go overall, you already know what colors
to use. I know, like the background. I solve the background. Try to get that pretty well thought out, and then you know, there's some days where I'll mix. Just get involved with, like, I'm not happy with anything. Even though, like, since it's ridiculous, there's, like, literally 500 containers of paint, and I don't like any of them. I mean, what that, you know, I have to make more because nothing's working in it. So, you know, it's kind of a nutty job. but most of this one I was able to kind of, I mixed about 20 colors for this, and the rest was brought, you know, stuff that I've had. And then before I came out here, I threw a bunch of stuff away, just got rid of all, you know, a good 200 containers of paint.
You get the colors in containers?
I buy the paint by Golden. It's a paint company called Golden Acrylic. It's in jars. Take it out with them. I buy boxes of plastic knives, and I just, you know, mix them up and... I buy by the pint, and some colors I buy small because I have commitment issues. I think that I don't want them. I don't want them around. You know, I don't know. No. You know.
You sort of done the shift from you've had like social commentary in your past work.
Yeah. Right.
So, has it been like a change for you personally that has shifted you from letting us all in on it to just naming it in the colors?
Oh, because of the names of the colors instead of writing it on the canvas? Maybe. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how, there's not a lot of images of my earlier work on the internet, so I don't know how. You know, the stuff that I kind of started out doing. Yeah, I mean, you also don't want to get pigeonholed as the text guy,
right?
So I knew, you know, I had a lot of this brewing in the back, and I don't really know. You know? Yeah, I guess so.
Do you think because Pete and Antonio, all these colors have a little influence on the Latin American?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, growing up in a place where, It's super bright, you know, the sun is shining, and locusts are, I haven't heard of locusts in forever, you know, it's like, definitely, you know, growing up in Connecticut would, I think making this these colorful kind of paintings would be a lot different, you know, and you wouldn't do it, you know. Definitely growing up down here has something to do with the bright colors. Also studying with Peter Saul at UT Austin, he, you know, he kind of has a lot of bright colors, and learning to paint the beginning years in San Antonio, you know, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Connecticut's gray, or upstate New York is gray a lot, right? We went to school together up there. Nice. I'd love to go to Columbia. So, anything else?
Eric, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you.